Every symphony has a conductor, every business an orchestrator. This is YES, your executive symphony, an educational forum for small and mid-sized businesses. Our goal is to help you thrive. In this episode, meet Melanie Kaur, managing partner and CEO of Signature Millwork. Melanie is a speaker at the upcoming YES Symposium, and she spoke with Carl Thomas recently about how the economic downturn of 2009 made her company better and stronger. Here's Carl Thomas with Melanie Kaur.
Hello, YES community. This is Carl Thomas, and I'm here today with Melanie Kaur of Signature Millwork. And we are really excited in this podcast to bring Melanie back. She spoke to our YES conference a while back, and we are really excited to do an update with her and learn a lot from the things that her company has gone through. So welcome, Melanie.
Thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here and to be back with YES.
Thank you. And we're really excited to join up with you again and to continue to share with our community. Let's just start to kind of update those who don't know that much about you. Tell us about Signature Millwork and a little bit about yourself and what you do here and all of that.
Okay, very well. Well, Signature Millwork is an architectural millwork company, so I sort of describe it as a boutique millwork company. So we primarily design, build, fabricate, and install beautiful custom interiors that have to do with wood. So wood, veneer walls, panels, ceilings, casework, cabinets. About 80% of our application is in a commercial environment. So for instance, museums, high-rise buildings, the public spaces, hotels, banks, law firms, country clubs, very high-end auto dealerships, boutique retailers. So that's where you'll see a lot of our work. So we're generally doing high-grade furniture finish millwork. The other 20% of our business is in distinguished residential. So we're working in a lot of the high-rises downtown, penthouses, apartments, large homes in Dallas, and we build everything from, you know, kitchens to living rooms, studies, dining room walls, windows, etc. So that's a little bit about Signature Millwork. So we are a subcontractor, and we work for large general contractors. So that is kind of how we define ourselves. In the millwork business, there's different grades of millwork, architectural being the one that primarily works with more exotic species of woods. So that's Signature Millwork. We were founded in 1991 by two union carpenters, and they grew the business quite substantially. In 2005, myself and three other partners bought Signature Millwork primarily as an investment. And I was not involved in the business on a day-to-day basis from 2005 to 2009. In 2009, at the time of the economic downturn, there was a lot of opportunity here, needless to say, because most of the commercial construction had come to a screeching halt in Dallas. So I've been here on an everyday basis since 2009 and have had the opportunity and the experience and I guess the blessing and curse of, you know, being on the downside and then being on the upside.
And so, and your role is?
So my role is, I serve as CEO, but I'm a managing partner. Myself and Jeff McNahan run the company. The other partners are investment partners. So primarily my oversight is business development. I also do an awful lot with employee safety, HR, OSHA. Because we are also a manufacturer, we deal a lot with EPA and emissions. We own our own building, so there's a lot that has to do with maintenance and managing a production facility. So in many ways, I'm the outside person, and Jeff is the inside person, but I do a lot of the operational processes as well.
Great. Mm-hmm. And how many employees do you have?
So we have 35 employees, and we've stayed pretty steady with that. And I think that the reason that we've been able to, number one, retain our employees and be able to stay, even though we've grown at a very stable rate, is number one, we invested in technology. So we bought machines that could, you know, help us improve productivity, and have invested a lot in terms of cross-training employees that they can move from installation projects to manufacturing to fabrication, so we don't have to, we don't work in so many silos.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. So just going back to the beginning, interesting that you decided to get into this business in a pretty tough economy. Take us through that thought process.
Well, in 2005, it wasn't a particularly difficult economy. So we acquired the company in 2005. In 2005. And at that time, the goal was really to hold it for 5 to 7 years, to build it, make it more efficient, have an opportunity to perhaps sell it to a larger national millwork company. And it was really a development opportunity. So all of us had come from corporate America and from consulting. None of us had, number one, been in construction. None of us had been in small business. My advantage is that I did grow up in a construction business, so I wasn't totally a fish out of water. So at the time that we bought it, it seemed like a very solid position. But in a period of 48 months, we went from being at full capacity to really maybe 20% capacity, and we're doing everything that we could to kind of diversify our client base, look at projects that maybe we wouldn't have, because our goal was to try to keep our employees employed and, of course, keep ourselves able to pay our loans and outstanding debt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that challenge came on, the economic downturn, mm-hmm. after a couple of years. And so the diversification was part of your strategy. Mm-hmm. Did you do anything else in particular to survive, essentially?
Right. So at the time that occurred, 175 millwork companies went out of business in Texas at the time. So it gave us, of sort, an opportunity to retool. So we were buying new equipment, sort of pennies on the dollar. So we just made the bold decision, I guess, at the time, that if we were going down, we were going down in flames. But we were going to give it the all-college try. So the first thing that we did is we invested more money in retooling. The second thing was, we were one of the last union shops in Dallas, and we did not renew our collective bargaining agreement with the union, and so at that time we went non-union. The advantage to that time was that we did not lose any of our team members, and I'd like to say it's because we're such great managers and that it's such a great company, but the truth be told, there weren't a lot of opportunities for people to go to either. So it was retooling, it was renegotiating our employment base, and it was about diversifying, because we had been primarily all in the commercial field, and that's when we really started working in this distinguished residential niche, because mm-hmm. that niche was not so impacted by commercial construction. So really began developing relationships with architects, interior designers, and general contractors that kind of worked in a niche market of individuals that might not have been so impacted by the downturn.
Mm-hmm. The decision to go non-union, was that primarily a cost decision, or were there other factors?
I have to say that it was primarily a cost decision. There were a lot of benefits being associated with the union, primarily training and apprenticeship. So we liked that aspect of it because, you know, we were getting skilled craftsmen out of the union, and it gave us a lot of flexibility in terms of staffing because you could pull on and off the union bench. So I can't, I would have nothing derogatory to say about it being union. I grew up in the Midwest, so I was very familiar with it. You know, unions were just a part of everyday business, everyday mm-hmm. labor. Mm-hmm. But in this situation, it was strictly financial. So at the time, in 2009, everybody started to try to bid in everybody else's, I guess I'd say, driving lane. So as I mentioned, there are different types of millwork. There's economy millwork, and you'll see that in, you know, public schools, grocery stores, strip centers, where it's paint grade millwork, and nothing wrong with it, but it's just it's at a you know, plywood and paint. And then as you go through the spectrum, you go from there to the boutique type of things that we do, working with exotic wood. Well, at the time, there was such a narrow bandwidth of opportunity that everyone started bidding on every type of job, whether you were qualified or not. So that was the challenge, because now you had people, you had firms, competitors, sort of, who were in this economy track, who were bidding in our lane and bidding at 50-60% less than what our bids were. Easy enough to do when you don't know what you're doing. So for a while, we had to endure this sort of price compression, and it was not unusual to be losing bids, as I said, like on a 50-60%. That went away because eventually, truth be told, you know, people saw, it's the old adage, you get what you pay for. Mm-hmm. And we had to ride out that path. And then obviously there's differences in the qualifications of the trades and the craftsmen who are working at that level. So we really worked hard to keep our team employed, and we really worked in terms of developing another market area to try to derive, you know, revenue growth and opportunity. And we still have that, and we've kept it, even as the market has now turned and commercial is just like drinking from a fire hose. But understanding that at all times you have to always be prepared for the next downturn, next upturn, next downturn. That's just the path of business.
So just to stay back in those tough times for a little bit more, talk a little more specifically about what you did to get into those areas of business that you weren't specifically into. What were your specific methods of entry? And then to also talk about how you went about equipping your people to be more skilled.
Okay. So first off, about how we got into niches that we weren't in was just good old-fashioned networking. It was just simply getting publications, getting magazines, going to networking groups, mm-hmm. meeting people, boots on the ground, pressing palms, and meeting people. Since all of our network was in commercial mm-hmm. and with commercial general contractors, and we had grown our business over the years from 91 until we bought it in 2005 and even into 2009 by just referral and word of mouth. So we had never really, we'd never done any advertising or marketing. So the marketing, the biggest part of our marketing was probably a redesign of our website, making it more aesthetic, using a lot more pictures and making it, you know, definitely more aesthetic to try to explain what it was that we did. So there was an investment in websites, so a bit of social media. Social media is sometimes a challenge because we don't want to work directly for a homeowner.
Right.
And then they get this HDTV, you know, kind of thing that, oh, I can call Signature Millwork on Monday and my whole, you know, kitchen can be redone by Wednesday. But anyway, I digress. So it was really networking for introductions and researching who were the best residential architects, designers, general contractors, and just picking up the phone, sending emails, calling people and making an introduction and being able to, you know, explain how easy it would be to transfer our mastery in general contract, in, you know, working on commercial projects to residential. And then as well, sometimes it's just it's fortunate to be lucky than good that a lot of the design trends really went towards our sweet spot, which was a more European look, slab front cabinets, so, you know, high gloss, high grade finishes, tight reveals, a more Euro contemporary look, which had always been more our sweet spot. So that helped too. So that's where sometimes I say it's better to be lucky than good. So that's kind of how we got into that. We got into that market and have stayed there. Although it's not the bulk of what we do, it's a good diversification of what we do.
Sure.
Yes. And there was another part of the question.
The other part was you had to expand the skills of your employees
right.
to serve in some of these different areas.
Right.
What did that take?
So the challenge was is that at the same time that we were no longer union, then we realized that we had lost a major, you know, training capability of sorts. And then with the aging workforce, you know, we had to be aware of that because those are like the last of kind of the talent that really knows how to work with their hands. You know, back in the day, shop and trades were taught in high school, so students knew how to work with their hands. Well, that went away for the last 30 years, mm-hmm. probably. I think there's a resurgence in it now, as students have been so burdened with, you know, school debt and compression of jobs, because a lot of jobs go away because of artificial intelligence and one thing or the other. So we really had to grow our own. So it was finding younger people who were willing to, you know, work hard and work with their hands and see that there, you know, was a good opportunity, there was a good way to support yourself, support a family, learn a craft and learn a trade. And so we would bring in, you know, new team members and then buddy them up with our more senior craftsmen. And that's
okay.
pretty much what we've continued to do.
All right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. So part of our emphasis in this upcoming conference is to learn from kind of what we're calling the boom and bust mm-hmm. environment. We've kind of been talking about the bust side of your curve in the beginning, and now in this generally positive economy, tell us a little bit about what that's doing to the business and mm-hmm. and what it looks like today.
Well, I was thinking about this before we sat down to have our conversation, and so many of the similarities of a downturn are the same things that you have to be on the upside. So I would say three things would be customer, financials, and employees. So number one, we're only as good as the people who build, develop, and deliver our work. So we have had an unwavering commitment to growing and developing and retaining team members. So just as though during a downturn you're committed to trying to keep your best people, you want to keep your best people in either situation, and it's either, you know, keeping them employed or keeping their skills and compensation in line with what trends are. So first is the people aspect. The second is always taking care of your clients and knowing what's good business. So I mentioned earlier on that there was a period of time that you had every mill worker competing for every piece of business. We never did that because we stuck true to what was our sweet spot, which we knew was high grade, well designed, well constructed millwork in a certain niche space, and we just stayed true to that. And we stayed true to our clients. So we didn't just chase the dollar. We just rode out the tide by sticking with who we knew we were best at and who we were as a company. So, and focused on delivering and helping our clients. Because oftentimes our clients were in a situation that they were pressured by owners to choose the low-cost bidder instead of knowing somebody that could do the work. And there were times that they picked the low-cost bidder, and then we'd have to go in there and clean it up, which we don't usually ever do, is fix other people's work. But we did it for commitment from our client. And as it wrote out, it ended up to be in our favor. And exactly knowing that even when you're under a downturn and there's not enough business, you still know what is good business. And so from that standpoint, we still just choose to do business that we know is good business instead of just chasing the revenue.
So how would you describe the state of the business today?
So the business now is, I think I've used this term already today, like drinking from a fire hose. So there's more work than what we can bid on. We've made a decision along the way that we're comfortable at being a certain size company. And, you know, we do have growth objectives, but we want to do it in a certain way because in some ways it's also a lifestyle company for us, for Jeff and I and our owners. So that helps that we always base it against. We always base our business decisions against that. So, again, we, you know, are always trying to choose what work is best aligned with what our capabilities are. Mm-hmm. We've also stayed true to who our core customers were. Even though we have a lot of new, we still are, you know, pay attention and respond to our legacy clients that have been with us since the very beginning. So I think that there's just a lot of pressure in Dallas right now because there is just not enough skilled trades. Because so many of the trades went out of business and people, you know, went into different lines of work, there's just not the talent to fill the need, and it's difficult. So in many ways, again, we're kind of going back to that situation where sometimes some companies are hiring unskilled labor and just trying to do the best they can to put it in there. And it's not to the grade that it's supposed to be by our AWI standard, but it's very difficult to do when you don't have the talent. So I see that kind of, again, from the standpoint of just trying, like a Band-Aid approach. Mm-hmm. So,
well, that's a great staging for what I think we'll have a really engaging conversation at our conference to talk about. What do you do when you're drinking from a fire hose? Mm-hmm. How do you survive that? Because mm-hmm. that's probably just as hard as when the business is hard to find in some ways. It's maybe different problems.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned financials, which I want to learn more about as we get into the details in our conference. And so I'm really excited about continuing to learn from you in those regards as we get together here in the near future.
Okay.
We are really excited to have you back, and I want to thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. I look forward to seeing everybody again at the conference as well.
We think it's going to be a great event and really happy to have you back.
Thank you so much.
Again, this is Carl Thomas, and we want to thank you for listening to this podcast. You can find our other podcasts on iTunes. If you look up Yes or Your Executive Symphony, you'll find them there, and we look forward to seeing you at the conference.
For more information about Yes and to register for the next CEO Symposium, go to yourexecutivesymphony.org.